Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, do you remember Fraggle Rock?
Dance your cares away. Worries for another day. Let the music play. Down in Fraggle Rock.
That's the one. That's the theme song.
Rock, well, rock.
Hopefully we can't get sued for that. Since it's in your own.
I don't think. Wouldn't that be cruel to sue? A bunch of Fraggles suing us?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it seem like sort of anti-Fraggle?
I don't know. Yeah, what kind of legislation exists that governs copyright issues in the sub-worlds versus the surface world? So did you grow up with the show, or are you...
No.
You didn't?
Mm. Yeah. I knew of it, and I think that I was maybe too into, at that point, like, hypnotizing myself on the weekends.
Okay.
Rather than watching Fraggle Rock.
Well, it was also an HBO thing in the States, I believe, so...
Oh, yeah.
So there would have been that limitation as well.
That would have been highfalutin back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I probably saw episodes of it on CBC... because my family was living in Canada at the time. So I think that's where I have my main Fraggle connection. Because, of course, the series ran from 83 to 87. It was carried on HBO, on CBC in Canada, and on the UK's Television South. And it's a silly show about creatures living in a cave. And their various adventures, their various songs, their various comments on daily life for us humans.
All right, let me just read this little bit from the Muppet Wiki about this. It says, the vision of Fraggle Rock articulated by Jim Henson was to depict a colorful and fun world, but also a world with a relatively complex system of symbiotic relationships between races of creatures, an allegory to the human world, where each group was somewhat unaware of how interconnected and important they were to one another. This allegorical world allowed the program to entertain and amuse while seriously exploring complex issues of prejudice, spirituality, personal identity, environment, and social conflict. Heavy, right?
Yeah. I think that's one of the amazing things about the show is that there is this very silly level to it, the surface level of Fraggle Rock. But yeah, you can start analyzing it and analyzing it, and there's a lot of rich complexity there because you're getting into these themes of you know, global relationships, of ecology, of how interconnected we all are. I mean, ultimately that's the message that Henson was trying to convey in the series, to make it educational, almost in a sort of moral sense, as opposed to strictly numbers and letters.
Yeah, you're right, because there's lots of themes to explore, like individuality versus like the common good and community and on. So it's kind of fascinating. There's even like an aspect of asexuality that you could go into, and maybe one day we will. But for today's purposes, we really wanted to introduce the Fraggle Rocks because we thought this was a great lens into cave living.
Yes.
Cavernous underground living. And what it's like. And when we talk about the Fraggles, by the way, we are talking about these creatures that are about 22 inches tall, and they really do sort of dominate the landscape of Fraggle Rock. And of course, Fraggle Rock is named after them. As you had mentioned, they live in this system of natural caves. And what's interesting about these caves is that they connect to other worlds, too.
Yes, to our world, but also to this other world where there are these giant creatures, right, that grow radishes.
And we'll talk about the radish economy in a moment and how important that is. But, you know, they kind of remind me of pack rats, which we've talked about before.
Yes, because they're also bringing back little curios from these other worlds and incorporating them into their little environment, into their dens even. We did a whole episode on the pack rat. Go back and listen to that if you like. I do want to note that in part we're drawing from an essay by Justin Werfel, titled The Ecology of Fraggle Rock, and this is one of four serious essays on Fraggles in the book The Wider Worlds of Jim Henson, essays on his work and legacy beyond The Muppet Show and Sesame Street. This was edited by Jennifer C. Garland and Anissa M. Graham, and this is just a really good book. You can find it on Amazon. It's published by McFarland, and it's pretty terrific. If you're a big Henson fan, a big Fraggle fan, a big Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, or what have you fan, even Farscape, check this book out because there's a lot for your brain to chew on in it.
Yeah, this will be your seminal summer read. Now, before we talk more about Fraggles and some of their relationships with one another, let's talk about caves because they really are these worlds of darkness. And in some ways, they are very much hidden worlds. So according to National Geographic, worldwide, 90% of caves have no visible entrance, and they remain undiscovered since they are underground, hidden from the vision of satellites, and inaccessible to GPS signals. So it would make sense that these things are hidden because you really have to go off and try to explore them and map them in order to really understand them. And the scientific study of caves and their environments is called speleology. And the formation and development of caves is called speleogenesis. And that's when we get into those ideas of stalactites and stalagmites, and all these amazing, formations that create this other world.
Yeah, just the idea that so many of these cave environments are literally sealed off from the rest of the world is pretty mind-blowing, because we're all familiar with sort of the basic cave environment where there's an entrance and there, like, say, bats are living in there and coming in and out, or there's a bear living in a cave and coming in and out, or even humans supposedly living in caves and coming in and out. But the idea of sealed environments that have been sealed away for millions of years, that's where it really starts getting amazing.
Yeah, it's like a basement to your house that you never even knew about.
Yeah, or a time capsule, like a living time capsule, where instead of course, everything staying stationary, it's changed, but it's changed according to its almost its own rules, uninfluenced by the world outside.
Indeed, and you can find them all over the place. You can find them at cliffs at the edge of a coastline being chipped away by pounding waves. Some have been created from lava flows, which create a kind of tube that hardens. And then you even have caves that form in glaciers where meltwater carves tunnels at the beginning of that water's journey to the sea.
Yeah, and in many cases, we're dealing with situations where at some point in the distant past, you had life forms that ventured into the cave, right? Because what is life going to do? Life is going to seep in. It's going to find its niche wherever it can find it, right?
Yeah.
And so it ventures into the cave. It adapts to sort of the twilight zone of the cave. Mm-hmm. And then over time, those forms take to the deeper, darker portions of the cave. And then circumstances occur that cut those environments off from the outside world. Though the life forms themselves may already be evolutionarily cut off from their previous forms and thus the outside world. And then they just remain cut off until millions of years later, somebody happens to be digging with a backhoe or strategically exploring for some sort of a cave environment.
Yeah, it's amazing to imagine all these caves existing, because if you think about it in this way, it takes about 100,000 years for a cave to widen large enough to actually fit a human inside of it. So all of this sort of deep history has been happening unbeknownst to us and undiscovered largely by us. And yet it is hosting just this rich ecosystem of all these different insects and animals and sometimes humans with their bars of gold.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention how long it takes for a cave to even be large enough for a human to fit in it, because I love the idea of subterranean humanoids, and we have so many versions of that in our myth and our fiction making, you know, ranging from like the Morlocks and goblins and ghouls and on up to more modern versions like the Chuds or the monsters in The Descent. And but when you look at cave biology, as we're looking at in this episode, you see more and more that it exists on a much smaller scale. And when you start pulling apart the resources required for a continued existence in a cave environment, the idea of goblins and creepers in the cave just don't really hold up.
Yeah, again, you're talking about species that survive on a smaller scale, and the reason for that is because there are limited resources. Right. So if you're in a cave, there's not that much to eat. And there's also a lot more predators than there are resources or prey, I guess you should say.
According to the National Geographic article, Discoveries in the Dark, at least a dozen known caves from Romania to Wyoming have no ecological connection to the surface. This means they run purely on geologic substances such as sulfur compounds, methane, iron, and hydrogen eaten by specialized microbes, which in turn feed higher organisms. And one of the examples they point out in this article, there's Israel's Elyon Cave, which was uncovered accidentally in May 206 by excavation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably sealed, they think, for a million years. All right. So there's this tiny little ecosystem in there fueled by warm groundwater laced with sulfur that in turn fed microbes and at least 10 previously unknown crustaceans and other creatures. And one of the crazy things about this, too, is that the area around this cave had been inhabited for just ages and ages.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had uncovered it until then. So it really drives home the question, how many little ecosystems are buried away just in our immediate vicinity that we've never happened upon, that are just thriving on their own, or if not thriving, at least barely getting by, because as we'll discuss, these are often very fragile environments. But how many such worlds are out there just hidden from us?
Well, and also we've touched on this before. Caves could be a rich source of possible antibiotics for us, because as we know from microbiologist Hazel Barton, who also spelunks, looking for possible bacteria that could be used, particularly against superbugs, which is pretty much wiping out our current arsenal of antibiotics. She is saying that, an antibiotic is really a very complex chemical compound. It's not something that can be synthesized in a meaningful way or an easy way. And she's saying that caves, with their kind of biodiversity in these special circumstances, could be growing the next sort of antibiotic that can help us do battle with these superbugs.
All right, so let's talk about some of these creatures that live in caves, the troglofauna, if you will.
Yes.
Now, we have basically three different types of troglophon, or we divide them up into three different categories. And these three categories really depend on how attached to the cave they really are, how dependent they are on the cave versus the outside world, versus the surface world.
Yeah, because if you have an insect, a spider, let's say, hanging out near the cave's entrance, it's going to be vastly different from its counterpart deep, deep inside. And in fact, you could say that this spider hanging out is just really a tourist. You could call this insect a troglozine.
Yeah, this comes from the Greek words troglos, meaning cave, and xenos, meaning guest. And these are animals that use the cave for shelter but don't complete their life cycle there. So bats are actually the best example of this, right? They live in the caves.
Mm-hmm.
They reproduce, they raise their young, but they also leave, and they have to leave every night in order to obtain that precious food. Other examples that are less snazzy, you have bears, which may live in the cave, may hibernate in a cave, but obviously they have to leave the cave. They are mm-hmm. essentially creatures of the surface world.
Mm-hmm.
Raccoons. And so these are guests of the cave, as the name implies.
Spirits of dead pirates.
Well, okay, you could throw that in as well.
Gold bars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So any creature, unnatural or natural, that is living in the cave, living some portion of its life cycle in the cave, but is not there all the time.
But then you have another category called troglophiles, which is cave lovers, right? File.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about worms, crickets, crayfish, and salamander, also beetles, who live off the dung piles produced by bats. And here you see them completing their life cycles in a cave, but they can also survive above ground.
Yes.
And they get, I kind of think about it as Persephone, right? And her deal with Hades.
Oh yes, she was stolen away to the underworld by Hades, but since he stole her and due to some sort of, they worked it out with the gods.
It was some sort of contract, like she only ate like 3 pomegranate seeds, therefore she could go up for the following seasons of the year. And so I think
that's why we have spring, right?
Because
she's allowed to come back.
And the troglophiles are kind of similar. You know, they've got a little bit of a pact with the cave in that way.
Yeah. I like to think of it in terms of, say someone listens to the Doors. Or what's a more hardcore example? Let's say fish. Let's say someone who listens to the band Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Take the troglozines. Again, they're guests of the cave. They can come and go, but they're not there all the time. So, as a fish listener, the troglozine, listens to fish, but also listens to other, bands and other musical options fairly frequently. And then with the troglophiles, this is a fish listener who listens to fish most of the time, but they can branch out. They can listen to other types of music. But the next group we're going to talk about, the troglobite, these are obligate cave denizens. They live exclusively in the cave, and this would be the fish fan who can only listen to fish, who cannot listen to anything outside of their personal listening niche.
Yeah, think about that spider who maybe started out at the cave entrance,
mm-hmm.
went in a little bit more. Let's say that its progeny then began to adapt itself. And then the progeny said, its offspring said, hey, I'm going to go way back there. That looks awesome back there. And then another generation of those spiders adapted even more. And all of a sudden, they are completely wedded to this space because they have changed so much to adapt to it, that they could no longer go out to that entrance of that cave.
Right. Not only are they adapting more and more to survive on the resources provided to them exclusively in the deeper portions of the cave,
mm-hmm.
but they've given up the adaptations they need to survive in the sunlit world. Chief among these, of course, pigmentation,
mm-hmm.
which is more than just colorful decorations on our skin. It protects us against UV rays from the sun. So without the sun, there's no need for our bodies to invest in that kind of protection.
You also don't need that sort of camouflage or that level of it, because most of the creatures that deep in the cave, they are without sight.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if you're essentially just pale, ghastly white, or even translucent, because the sight isn't really an issue anymore.
But you get these other great adaptations, like you get longer limbs or longer antennae, which really allow you to have a more exquisite system to ferret out sensations around you.
Yeah, because you need to touch more of the area around you, so you have more appendages with which to touch it, longer appendages with which to touch your surroundings. You're more dependent upon sound or even just slight sensations across the skin,
mm-hmm.
changes in air quality, for instance.
And this is where it gets really freaky-deaky, though, because the sort of creatures that we know and love are vastly different deep within the cave. And I'm talking about a pseudoscorpion, for instance, that doesn't have a stinging tail, instead it injects venom with its claws.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's got this adaptation of like, well, let me just throw this venom out here in the claw area because it's a lot easier for me to get to my prey because I have more, as I had said earlier, exquisitely attuned senses now.
Now, other troglobites include, and just to back up on that, troglos, of course, again, means cave, and bios means life. So this is cave life in its purest sense, really. And among the troglobites, we find various types of crayfish and shrimp, cavefish, salamanders, various insects, arachnids, as we've discussed. Another crucial thing about adapting to that ecology, adapting to that environment, mm-hmm. even the cave, is that this is not a... In the same way we discussed the vampire bat in the past, where the vampire bat is adapting to a diet that is not a rich diet,
mm-hmm.
These creatures have adapted to thrive in a world that is not rich in resources. So they have to survive on less, and they have to have a metabolism that can allow for long periods of famine.
Yeah, so they have a much slower metabolism. And in a sense, these are sort of extremophiles, right, because they're living in extreme conditions. And as a result, this kind of changes their lifespan. You had mentioned the crayfish. There's the crayfish of Shelta Cave, Alabama, which mates around its 100th year and can live over 150 years.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Here it is. It's a century old, and it's still breeding, or it's even just getting around to breeding.
Yeah, this
is just reaching maturity, sexual maturity. And then it has another half century or even, I've seen even estimates of up to 175-year lifespans for these creatures. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then you just have some creatures that are visibly strange. They are otherworldly to us, like the Proteus anguinus, which is an ulm or a salamander. And it has a serpentine body, and it's, of course, it's translucent looking. It's covered by that whitish translucent skin. And it has two frilly pink gills at the back of its head. And what I love about this is that the first written account of it dates back to 1689, in which finally the scholar Janez Vajkard Vassavor disputed the belief that these ulms were baby dragons. That's how strange they were.
Yeah.
People were like, ah, that must be a baby dragon.
Yeah, this is something so fantastic. It must be making our more fantastic ideas a reality. Some of the other creatures that we ran across, they're, of course, rimipedes, and these are pretty amazing. You've probably seen them before. They look kind of like centipedes from another planet,
yeah.
Really. And these are Earth's most primitive living crustacean. They dwell in saltwater coastal caves across the globe, and it's believed that they may have started out over 100 million years ago when the supercontinent Pangaea was first breaking up. And so now you find them all over in these aquifer environments, these underground layers of water-bearing permeable rock.
And that's what must be so exciting for biologists, is to find these new species. Just, you know, crack open one of these caves,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden say, oh my gosh, look at the adaptations. And just look at the biodiversity present here that we had no idea even existed.
Yeah, it's kind of like backing up the clock and saying, well, what if we had gone this direction instead of this direction,
mm-hmm.
and seeing that alternate timeline of evolution. In a sense, that's kind of what it's like when we're peering into these environments.
You're right. It is like a time capsule in that sense.
And we continue to find all these new creatures, and we give them some pretty amazing names. I was reading about some of these that have been named after Japanese movie monsters. For instance, there's the swimming Mothra or Pleomothra. There's the strong Godzilla or Godzillius robustus. And then there's the gnome Godzilla, the Godzillionomus. which are all just fantastic names for organisms.
Coahuila!
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to get into some serious discussion about the Fraggles.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back. I did not realize that John Goodman was in Chud.
Yeah, it's a bit part, but he's in there.
Huh, yeah. All right. Even better. All right, so let's get back to these Fraggles. And because now we have this sort of the baseline idea of cave ecology and what dwells within it. Can't help but just kind of looking at these guys and saying, all right, what's going on there?
Yeah, and that is indeed what Justin Werfel did in his essay in the Henson book that we mentioned earlier. Looking at Fraggle Rock as not just the TV show, but the environment portrayed there. Looking at the various creatures, mm-hmm. Especially the three primary creatures that we're going to discuss, and trying to make sense of them in terms of real world ecology, real world science, which this is an area I love to explore in my own work. You know, comparing something unnatural with something natural and seeing how they line up, and often it's surprising how well they do. And yeah, certainly we see that there with the Fraggle. So let's start with the tidal organism, the Fraggle.
Yes, they are a very carefree lot. They spend most of their time playing, exploring, and generally enjoying themselves. They're all about individualism, and they live on a diet of vegetables. Now, radishes. That's pretty much like if they had a food pyramid, it would be like the radish would occupy probably about 80% of that space.
Yes.
And now radishes are also used in construction of something called doozer sticks, and we'll get to that in a second, but they munch on that quite a bit. Fraggles have the unique ability to share dreams. I love this.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I forgot about this particular power.
Yeah. If they touch their heads together before falling asleep, they can enter the dream of the other Fraggle.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So they do the sort of like drift thing.
Wow. That is impressive. That just makes my imagination run wild with possibility. What would human culture be like if we could do that? I mean, in a sense, we find ways to do that. But not an organic level.
That's on the books.
Oh, man. Well, they should call it like fraggleization or dream fraggleization. That should be the process.
Fraggle drift?
Yeah, Fraggle drift.
All right. So these guys are the Fraggles. They share this cave or this environment, I should say, with the doozers who are starkly different from them.
Yeah. While the Fraggles kind of strike me as, if I was to connect them to real world biology, I would say that maybe they evolved from some form of lemur. They seem like a kind of a cave lemur type of a creature.
Yeah.
Whereas the doozers are a little, they're smaller, for starters.
And 6 inches.
6 inches. And they're a little more insect-like. They have antenna and they build constantly. They're kind of, you could almost think of them in terms of social insects, like social builders, like wasps and bees. Except, A, they're living in caves.
Yeah.
And B, they're building things that look like bridges and little towers and just the stuff that looks like human construction projects. And their primary construction material is composed of or made from radish. So it remains edible to anybody who's into eating radishes, namely the Fraggles.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that and why this is really important. Mm-hmm. And there are parallels in ecology with that. But yeah, the doozers are absolutely dedicated to their work and nothing but their work. And they're not about the individual. They are about the community.
Right.
But then you have something called ditzies. These are tiny little creatures that give off light. They are bioluminescent.
Yeah, they're kind of like fairies almost, and they just float around, lighting up this cave environment, and that's also crucial. We'll discuss that. So these are the three main species. Now, just to run through them real quick, we could almost think of this as a game show, a troglofauna game show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to name each one, and you tell me if you think that this creature would be a troglozine, a troglophile, or a troglobite. Fraggle.
Fraggle, I think, would be a troglobite. No, excuse me, troglophile, because they go outside to forage for radishes.
Yes. Yeah, I would say they would be a troglophile, or you could almost make the argument that they're troglozines, since they have to go out to get those radishes.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could.
But then that brings up the question, that's a question they end up answering, right? If the radishes on the surface are not available, then there are disastrous consequences.
Then they are troglozines.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Now, how about the doozers?
The doozers, I'm a little sketchier on.
Yeah.
Because they also are dependent on the radishes, but that's just their industry, right? Not necessarily the basis of their diet. But if they're so tied to their work that they would die, and there's even one instance where they might have to relocate. So I'm going to say they're troglozine as well.
Okay. I mean, you could make the argument that. I mean, do they bring the radishes down? I'm under the working assumption here that the Fraggles bring the radishes down and then the doozers use that radish material. So if they're not actually, if they're dependent upon another organism that is a troglophile or a troglozine, they could potentially themselves be troglobites.
I don't know.
It's an open question.
I feel like this is up for debate, but
this is a game our listeners can play as well.
Okay.
Vote on the doozer issue: troglozine, troglophile, or troglobite. Likewise, the ditzies are a little hard to nail down as well, but they seem a little more on the troglobite scale.
I would say the troglobite because they seem to have their counterparts in glowworms, which
yes.
we know exist in caves in New Zealand and Australia, and they also give off light. So there's a possibility that they could be true troglobites. So why are we talking about all these guys? Well, because, of course, they are exhibiting something called mutualism, which is really important in ecosystems.
Yes. In this instance, we've touched on a little of this already, but the fraggle eats a host of pilfered vegetables. The radish is key among these. They forage this from the surface. They bring it home where it plays a pivotal role in their ecology and the overall ecology of Fraggle Rock. So, again, it basically goes down like this. Fraggles eat the radishes.
Mm-hmm.
Doozers themselves seem to eat some sort of custard-based food pellet, perhaps something they get from a fungus. I don't know. We have a lot of questions about that.
Right.
But they use the radishes in their building materials. And then fraggles, in turn, eat the doozer building constructions. They'll walk through and they'll destroy part of it, kind of like Godzilla's,
mm-hmm.
and munch it down because it's edible. And in doing this, they're kind of playing the role of a decomposer. Because they're, instead of, like an insect may eat dead animal parts, you know, just that keeps dead animals then from piling up all around us, breaking down those materials. The fraggle is breaking down the doozer materials, which in turn makes room for more doozer construction.
Yeah, and we actually see what happens when the fraggle stop eating these crazy constructions by the doozers. And in fact, it's episode 106, and
okay.
It is called The Preachification of Convincing John.
This is the one that Jonathan Strickland was telling us.
This is the one. Yeah. You got to watch it. It's not the one that made him cry as a child.
Oh,
that's a different one.
Which one made him cry?
I can't remember. There was some sort of circumstance where a couple of the Fraggles were stuck in the cave and they thought they were going to die.
Oh.
And he said that it was interesting because they were so explicit in there about like the actual they might die, which was a concept, you know, as a child that you're trying to figure out and the actual threat of it. Being experienced
again,
by
the show
these
got into some deep areas.
Fraggles, but anyway, back to the preachification of Convincing John. Convincing John is one of the Fraggles, and he has a lot of influence over the other Fraggles. And so Moki is one of the Fraggles, and she decides, you know what, the doozers, they love building so much, and these are such intricate structures that they're building. We just come along and chomp them. Perhaps we should respect their building, and so she gets everybody to stop eating them. What happens?
Absolute chaos.
Absolute chaos. I mean, you see, like, construction of these radish temples everywhere. And, in fact, there's so much so that they're taking up space that everybody actually occupies in their regular day-to-day lives. And then the doozers think, well, let's get out of here. Because these guys aren't eating it. We have no space to build anymore.
So, wow. So they actually start planning to launch out of there and explore new regions of the cave.
Yeah, it's really sad. I think like there's even like the scene between the doozer baby and her mom, and the baby's going, "Why do we have to leave?" She's like, "Because things just happen like this. Life is hard," or something like that.
And then, of course, we have the ditzies that again are producing light for the in the cave, and in turn, they depend on the sound of fraggles in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a relationship that's a little harder to line up with anything in the natural world. But I'm also not discounting the possibility that maybe it's a little more complex than that. I don't know. Maybe they somehow use the sound of the fraggles. The vibrations to know where they are, or it vibrates organs.
I think it somehow contributes to their ability to be bioluminescent organisms, and that somehow that spark of energy is created by the vibrations from sound.
And what happens if the ditzy lights go out?
Well, they go comatose, really.
Yeah, fraggles go comatose. Other forms of life in the cave become comatose. So light in Fraggle Rock is not merely a nice bonus and something that allows us to see the characters on this TV show. It is an essential part of their ecology. So you see, if one part of this triangle is affected, it ends up affecting all of them. And that's, again, part and partial to the ecological message and the global community message of Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, and we don't know if glowworms were to cease glowing, if they would really seriously affect other species' ability to live in the caves that they dwell in. But we do know, as you say, all of that is very fragile and all of it works in tandem.
Yeah, I mean, we see many examples of this, but one example I grew up with was, you know, growing up in a sort of a rural Tennessee environment where a lot of people were hunting deer.
Mm-hmm.
And then having to and asking the question, well, why are they shooting deer? What if they stop shooting deer? And then someone explains, well, if they stop shooting the deer, then there are too many deer. Why would that be? Well, that's because there's nothing, there are no natural predators around to eat the deer anymore. Why are they gone? So, oh, well, because we messed that up as well. And you get into these, you know, all of these butterfly effects in our environment, where you change one little thing or one big thing, and the ramifications can be pretty intense.
Well, I mean, the honeybees.
Oh yeah,
that's are an excellent example of this. The pesticides we now know are responsible for the collapse of the honeybee colonies.
And so again, we see this interesting fragile system of mutualism here. Now, in the natural world, we see plenty of symbiotic relationships in caves, but as for mutualism itself, you have to kind of go to a much smaller scale in the caves to really see this going on. Given the rarity of resources in a cave environment, there's an overwhelming sense of selfish competition among cave fauna. But as discussed in the article "What's Up Down There: Microbial Diversity in Caves" by Hazel A. Barton and Valm Girado, published in a 2007 edition of Microbe magazine, quote, "Because limited but chemically complex nutrients enter the cave system, very few microbial species are capable of encoding all the necessary uptake and catabolic reactions to support growth. To overcome this limitation, selfish competition for resources is replaced by cooperative and mutualistic associations, such as have been seen in biofilm communities." End quote. So there's just a little insight into the reality of mutualism in caves. It even though this is a very resource-sparse environment, and there is a lot of intense mm-hmm. competition and lots of appendages that may grab you and push you towards some sort of translucent mouth,
yeah,
there still is some mutualism to be found.
But let's talk about some of those appendages, because that's kind of fun.
Ah, yes, predators. Well, you know, it should come as no surprise to any casual Fraggle observer or even someone who's never seen the show, since we just mentioned how an episode dealt with death, that there would be an episode that also deals with predation, at least to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And there is indeed an episode where we learn about the glob, an amoeba-like creature which apparently preys on doozers. But it's apparently a pretty rare creature. It's only really mentioned this once. A lot of the doozers don't seem to know about it. So this suggests that it might reside outside the cave and simply venture inside to hunt, which is reminiscent of certain real-life organisms, such as skunks, which if you've ever watched, I believe it was The Life of Mammals from mm-hmm. David Attenborough, there's a whole scene where they show this cave environment, and you have, of course, a colony of bats, and baby bats will sometimes fall down.
Yeah.
And they have a chance to make it back up, but they have to make it all the way across the cave floor and then back up the wall. And during that time on the floor, they make a very tempting snack. So tempting that you have skunks that are venturing in from the surface world in order to paw at them, to paw them out, slap them around, and then eat them.
Yeah, I mean, skunks don't know. They're probably like, I'm going to go to the baby bat store now.
Yeah.
They go into a cave, and they're like, have any fallen? Yep, okay, nice snack, thank you. You also have something called the giant centipede, and this will hide out on the underside of a rock and then attack bats, and they use their oversized legs to overpower their prey.
Yes, Scolopendra gigantine. Just to drive this home, this is a centipede that can overpower a bat that preys on mammals, which just kind of strikes a very uncomfortable chord with me, because it feels like some sort of natural order has been perverted here.
Yeah.
Centipedes should not be preying on mammals. Those should be off the menu for you invertebrates, unless you're decomposing something.
I think it also underscores how much the centipede has adapted to that environment to have limbs that long enough and that strong enough to pin down a bat.
And if you want to learn more about that particular centipede, there's a 2005 study, Predation by Giant Centipedes, Scolopendra giganti, on three species of bats in a Venezuelan cave. And that's put out, that was conducted by the University of Puerto Rico. It's a pretty interesting read with some very terrifying images of centipedes latched to the ceiling of the cave and kind of arching their back and grabbing at bats.
Yeah, you know, I found myself, is that the one that has a slideshow?
Yes.
Yeah, I found myself sketching a lot of those because they were so much fun.
For the most part, however, in Fraggle Rock, we don't see a lot of predators. We hear about various creatures that may or may not pose a danger to Fraggles, but, they seem to live a pretty comfortable life for the most part, certainly they're able to fret about things that are a little less of substantial, given their comfort zone.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of experience outside of their own environment, so they kind of have to rely on different information to get through, and that's where Uncle Matt comes into it, because he enters the human world, which is called outer space. And he sends back postcards about what these crazy humans are doing, like the fact that there's these hard-hatted people building things, but their buildings taste awful.
They do. They really do taste awful compared to the wonderful radish. You know, I remember watching the show as a kid and kind of trying to imagine what the Doozer materials tasted like. And now I can sort of imagine that kind of a sugary radish.
That's what I think, yeah.
Kind of taste, yeah.
Yeah. But although they're kind of crystalline looking.
Like it's almost radish sugar that they've made.
Yeah. Which is why they would be so delicious. They would have to be a supernormal stimuli.
Yeah. All right, so there you have it. Fraggles, Fraggle Rock, Doozers, Ditzies, the Glob, Giant Centipedes, the whole nine yards.
That's right, life in a cave and what it might be like from a true Fraggle Rock experience perspective.
Yes. Now, we know that we have listeners out there who have a lot more hardcore experience with the Fraggles, who have seen all the episodes and have gone back again and again to feed the nostalgia. And I know that you guys and gals probably have some additional information you would like to bring to the table regarding Fraggles and how they might fit into our natural world. Likewise, if you have some tidbits about cave ecology and cave biology that you would like to share with us, be it grounded in the real world or the world of fiction, you can certainly get in touch with us, and we'd love to discuss that with you.
Yeah, let us know about your thoughts on the Fraggleverse.
Yes. All right, so if you want to do that, you want to get in touch with us, reach out to us. You'll find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the mothership. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes, our blog posts, our videos, links out to our various social media accounts, which include Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube, where we are Mind Stuff Show, and Google Plus. Who knows what else? Who knows what the future will bring?
Yeah, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email at blowtomind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com. Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.